Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
This is Patricia Camilleri, welcoming you to University Matters on Campus FM. In this series, together, we shall continue to discover more about the work of the university's academics and about the many activities that will be taking place on campus over the next year. I'm very pleased to have with me today on University Matters on Campus FM, Professor Joanne Kassar. Just a few words, as usual, about my guest. Professor Kassar is Associate Professor at the University of Malta and Head of the Department of the Built Heritage, which runs three master's courses on conservation and cultural heritage management. She's carried out research since 1981 on composition, properties, deterioration and conservation of building materials, including the local building limestone. From 1986 to 1994, whilst working at the National Museum of Archaeology in Malta, she directed a research programme involving the monitoring of environmental conditions at the prehistoric Hypogeum, an underground site, in, as everybody knows, also known as Hal Saflini, and is also a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And as well, she did studies on deterioration within the megalithic temples of Malta, also UNESCO World Heritage Sites. She has, of course, written numerous articles in top journals, presented papers at international conferences, and lectured widely abroad. Professor Kassar is currently a member of the Board of Directors of Heritage Malta and sits on the Scientific Committee for the Conservation of Megalithic Temples of Malta and on the Steering Committee of the Notarial Archives of Malta. Professor Kassar has been a member of the International Advisory Board for the MA on Wall Paintings Conservation at the Courtauld Institute of Art in London, and has sat on the editorial board of the Quarterly Journal of Engineering, Geology and Hydrology of the Geological Society of London as Associate Overseas Editor. She's a Fellow of the International Institute for Conservation, a Fellow of the Geological Society, and Chartered Chemist and Fellow of the Royal Society of Chemistry. I know that it's a bit of a long, brief bio, but I always want to emphasise that one of the aims of this programme is to introduce our very qualified academic staff and also to show that they're not just sitting in their offices at Tal Roa and are active in society and provide an extremely important service to the country apart from their teaching obligations, of course. Welcome, Professor Kassar.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to this programme.
There are many things that I would like to discuss with you today, including, of course, the work of your department, which I hope we'll have time to hear about. But perhaps we can start off with this interesting EU project, acronymed in the typical EU way as EWAGLOSS, the long title being European Illustrated Glossary for Conservation Terms of Wall Painting and Architectural Surfaces. Perhaps you could introduce us to the project and tell us about its aims.
Yes, thank you. This project was actually the brainchild of the Horniman Institute in Germany, Dr. Angela Weyer, who, as an organization, but also other organizations, were feeling the need to bring together the terminology which is used for conservation and restoration, and to try to come to a homogeneous, to an agreement on the way the terms are used, primarily in the English language, but also, because this is one of the main aims of the glossary, to translate it into other languages. 12 languages are involved in this glossary. So it is creating a dictionary. It's called a glossary because it will be illustrated with very, very clear and a lot of photographs to illustrate the terms. But the main aim is that if I'm speaking to a colleague in Italy or in Germany or in Turkey, we mean the same thing when we say the same word, which isn't that common, because this is where the problems arise, that we think we're meaning the same thing, but we're meaning quite different things. So the idea is to first choose a number of terms. So Dr. Ware brought together a number of partners in very many different countries, going from Spain to France to Croatia, Malta, Romania, and Turkey, but also associate partners in other countries to bring together people to decide which terms need to be defined. So after the first meeting, which took place in Turkey, it was decided that 200 terms would be selected. And these cover buildings and wall paintings. So they go from materials to forms of deterioration, to causes of deterioration, to actual treatments, products used for treatments, and methodologies used for treatments. So these terms were then chosen, divided up amongst the partners, who then came up with their definitions in English. This is where the Maltese role becomes rather important, because we are the only country who are, well, we could say mother tongue is English to a certain extent. So our main role was not only to have our own set of terms to define them, but also to look at everybody's terms and trying to harmonize the English. Not an easy task. And at the stage we are at the moment, everybody has more or less finished defining their terms. We are looking at the English batch by batch, and as we do this, we are sending them back to be translated into the other 12 languages, but I think another 4 have also been added on at a later stage. So it's going to be quite a vast glossary.
This glossary is going to be describing conditions and, as you say, methodologies and this sort of thing. However, it's just going to be a description. It's not going to be suggesting ways and means of doing things.
Absolutely. This was very important for us, but it was something which we knew at a very early stage, but we also put it down in writing at a very early stage. This is not the end. You cannot do conservation by the book. You cannot have a recipe book for conservation. It just doesn't exist. No, all we are doing is saying, you know, when I say black, what do I mean? When I say wall painting, what do I mean? When I say fresco, what do I mean? That's all. Simple definitions of terms, full stop. We have decided to, in very, very serious cases, when a methodology is outdated and not used anymore, we do put in one sentence, look, this technique is no longer in use. But that is as far as we're going to go. We can't dictate, and we will not dictate, and we cannot even recommend. It is a case-by-case scenario every time.
And you've been meeting up in various countries. I mean, I know in these EU projects you do meet up.
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to mention that this is in Malta, there are different people who are working on it. It is my department primarily, but I am being heavily supported by my staff. So I've got 3 members of staff who are working with me on this. We have involved our conservation students as well in, for example, taking the photographs and in also in choosing some definitions as well. I have also included a couple of people who have graduated in English to help us with the English language. And they were chosen on purpose that they do not know the terminology, just to make sure that the English is understandable. So it's a teamwork. Now, the first meeting, yes, was held in Turkey. My colleague, Dr. Chafai, went to that meeting. The second meeting was in Spain in September, which I attended. Next one is going to be in February in France, and the last one in Croatia in September, I believe. So it's a 2-year project, so that wraps up the project. And I do want to say that it is a project which is supported by the EU's culture program between 2007 and 2013. It's important too, because it started in 2012. So it's important to mention that this is an EU-supported program.
And a very good example of collaboration amongst different countries, because I think this is one of the wonderful things about these EU projects, that they do insist that these projects involve many different countries, because I think what you get out of it, I mean, you can perhaps say more than I, when you go to these meetings, you're talking about the subject, obviously, and discussing, in this case, the glossary. But of course, it goes much beyond that, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely. First of all, you get to know people who sometimes you know very well, but on paper. You know the name, you know the institution, but you've never met them. And also other people who are maybe new to the field, but are doing very good work, and that's a bonus. But also, you learn to realize and understand that not all people work in the same way. And that is something you have to teach yourself, that you cannot dictate, you cannot. So there are, yes, a lot of things which help you when you come back. Also how to deal with your own colleagues, in that not everybody reasons in the same way, not everybody thinks in the same way. But at the end of the day, you know, what they are saying is equally valid. So, yes, it is a huge learning curve. And we give, I think, a lot to each other. Obviously, there are problems with the English language because some partners, you know, have better and so on. But everybody has been very, very cooperative in that day. You know, they say, you know, we're really thankful that you are helping us with the English. So it is give and take. We're learning a lot as well from them, and I hope they're learning something from us.
And also from the networking point of view. I mean, these are all people who are in your area. At the end of the project, there may be contacts which you can then refer to in your own work.
Definitely. It's a very small, conservation is a very small world. Many people know each other, at least by name, but meeting them is a different matter. And I can also say that through these meetings, we are also developing contacts. So we are looking towards Erasmus agreements with some of them, to bring them over and for us to go over and to send students over. So yes, this does develop into an academic sort of bonus as well, also for the students and for the staff, because some of them are actively chasing us now for Erasmus agreements. So that is really something. It's peripheral, but it's hugely important.
Also, do you think this sort of works into a very general improvement in status of restoration or conservation, particularly in your case, in Europe as a concept, as a mindset?
Well, it does depend, yes, but it does depend on which country you're looking at. In some areas, it is something which is very highly recognized and very well developed. In others, it is developing. So there's a lot to learn from each other. And European status, in fact, the Evogloss group does not include formally the international conservation organizations, but they have been informed and they are on board, and they will hopefully attend the last meeting to give feedback on a wider European level. So you've got the IIC, the International Institute for Conservation, ECHO, which is the European Conservation Conservators Organization, ICROM, and so on, will be invited. So, yes, the European dimension is being looked at, and yes, it's hugely, hugely important, because also because of mobility, because of European mobility. It is important that you do not live in your own little cocoon and then need to or want to go and have some practice abroad, and then you're just in an area where you're not understanding what is going on. So yes, it's hugely important for the field as well. And I think it's hugely important also as a tool, because the conservator who's maybe working on his own in the field has not many people to consult with, but at least they have a tool which they can use, an additional tool to the already existing ones. Because some years ago, many years ago, I was involved with another international glossary, which was on stone deterioration. My field is stone, not wall paintings. I must insist that my colleagues are doing the wall paintings bit, not me. And in fact, our terms were mostly concerned with stone and not wall paintings. But we have found that this glossary, which was, I think, came out in 2002, which was supported by ICOMOS at that point, it was by the International Scientific Committee on Stone, is used a great deal. Everybody says what a useful tool, and I'm glad this exists, and there was nothing like it before. So we're hoping that this will have equal status now in the wall paintings field, as opposed to the stone field. So from our experience, they can be very, very useful tools.
And I suppose also the different countries involved will also present different problems. They will have different challenges of their own. And perhaps somebody in Turkey would be familiar with the challenges of that area. But there may be another country which has different problems, different climatic situations, where the glossary might have to be extended.
Yes,
if you see what
yes. Of course, this is going to be a first edition, and obviously it will then be out in the field, and we'll get feedback and try to amend it and adapt it. But this is what you are saying is one of the huge challenges, because that is why we are avoiding, another reason why we are avoiding sort of recipes, or because what is maybe frowned upon in one country may still be the norm in another. So you cannot absolutely say, we're not there to dictate, we cannot dictate. So that's why we want, but the terms should be able to have the same definition wherever you are. I cannot afford to go to Spain or to Germany and say something when I mean something when I say conservation, and then find that they mean, rebuilding when they say conservation. We cannot afford that, because then obviously there's a cultural heritage which will be affected. So we are sticking to terminology. But there is a European organization which is trying to standardize methodologies, but it's not, again, for conservation work. It is mostly for the investigations that take place before you carry out conservation work. That is scientific rather than, conservation is in direct contact with cultural heritage. The other one is more lab-based, and that one you can, in some ways, standardize. So that is another working group which is completely different from ours, but they are involved also with us.
And obviously here in Malta, just turning to Malta now, in the last 10 minutes that we have, there's been a lot of restoration work and a lot of conservation work going on in these last years. Rather than go into a discussion of what's been done and what hasn't been done or whatever, as a conservator yourself, if you had a wish list, what would be your personal priorities here in Malta?
Okay, first of all, just a small correction. I'm a conservation scientist. I am not a conservator, and I cannot and I will not do conservation. I cannot. As a conservation scientist, my big complaint has been through the years, and it still is the research aspect. We are not doing enough research to support the works. We don't know enough about the products we are using in relation to the local stone and the local environment. We are not keeping, at least we're not definitely keeping pace with the research which is going on abroad. We are reacting rather than being proactive. We are not taking into account the local situation, and we have no funding. There is no funding. I mean, my PhD students work full-time and do their PhDs part-time just to try to do some basic research on conservation. So my main complaint is, if I may say, why have we spent millions of euros with not even any money being set aside for the research part? That is something, I'm sorry, I cannot understand.
You know, the research, obviously, from a university academic is a priority, is going to be the priority. Really.
But it's not only that. I feel in some cases, obviously not all and obviously not widespread, but in some cases we are going a bit blind. This has been used in Italy, therefore it must be okay. Maybe yes, maybe no. I don't know.
Well, I think that leads on to the academic side from your department. You, as I mentioned in the bio at the beginning of the program, you do run courses.
Yes.
And they are, I think, different ones open in different years.
Yes, yes.
But perhaps you can explain that better.
Yes, okay. We are a small department. Now we have become the Department of Conservation and Built Heritage. So our title just changed about a month ago. So our remit is also conservation in the wider sense, besides that of the built heritage. And we run, two master's courses are ours. We have full ownership. One is an MA in cultural heritage management, which is going to open. It doesn't open every year, but it's going to open again next October. And we accept and we wish to have applicants from a very, very wide series of subjects. We accept people who are coming from management, but also people who are coming from art history, from archaeology, from science. Why not? So that's a course which is a full-time course. It leads to an MA. Then we have an MSc course, which is the hands-on course, which turns you into a practicing conservator. It is for wall paintings and architectural surfaces. That is, again, going to start in October. There, again, we accept people both from an arts background and a science background. It is 3 years overall. There's one preparatory year and 2 years master's. It's full-time, very intensive, 50% theory, 50% practical, and we do a lot of practical work with the students. And that's opening in October again. And those we have full ownership. And then we also participate greatly in the new MArch, which is Masters in Architecture, which is the professional masters, which leads to the warrant for architects. I'm not talking about the warrant for conservators. This is the warrant for architects to practice as a perit in Malta. And it is a new stream, which is architecture and conservation. It started this October. It will be held every year. It will start every October. It's a 2 years professional masters. So you do a lot of architecture, design, and so on, but a lot of conservation as well. And those are our main courses, and all of them will be opening in October. I have different staff members who coordinate them. They all come from different fields. For example, the management, cultural heritage management, is run by an archaeologist with a lot of experience in cultural heritage management, Dr. Ruben Grima. Dr. Chafai coordinates the MArch, and I have two conservators, Ms. Porter and Ms. De Angelis, who coordinate the hands-on wall paintings and stone surfaces.
I can imagine that the Masters, the architecture, the MArch, is a very important qualification, yes, for today's architects, really, when you consider how much,
yes,
renovation of old buildings is being done.
Yes, this was born out of the changes in the faculty, where the 5-year BE&A course became 3+2. It's 3 years BSc now, and it's 2 years master's. That was a fundamental change in the faculty. And it was born also out of an old MSc we had, which was just a specialization master's. It wasn't a professional master's, where we find that, for example, a lot of government tenders require the presence of a conservation architect. So we have found over the years that our students have been very much in demand. We embedded it within the new professional masters also because we wanted, you know, a stream where conservation is given full importance, but also can lead to them having the warrant, because before they had the warrant at the BE&A stage. So it's something, yes, which is hugely important, and we find that our students are very, very much in demand. It has become a sort of the benchmark for conservation of buildings. You need to have somebody who has followed a course at master's level in conservation.
And the cultural management course, mm-hmm, what does that really aim to, what is the deliverable, shall we say, from that course?
Well, the idea behind it is to have professionals who can work within the management of cultural heritage, whether it is an archaeological site or a historic house or any sort of national museum or even private museum or some sort of, I don't know, church, which is also as a museum. So basically you manage cultural heritage in its widest sense. So we even do things like repatriation of cultural heritage and so on. So we do the very wide sense, in that you can be prepared to manage anything which is of cultural heritage importance. It can range from a tiny, you know, ruin to a historic house to a national museum. And we find that people who are already working in the field are very much interested in the course to improve themselves. But also people who are doing other things. I mean, we get people also who are in the health area, who want to maybe, we have one particular student very interested in seeing how museums can help people with disabilities. So it's very wide. It is really very wide. And anybody who is interested should really speak to me or to Dr. Grima, because it can cater for a lot of different needs, which you may not even think of when you just see the title. But it is online. Obviously, the course description is online.
There are a lot of boutique hotels going up now in Valletta. I was surprised somebody mentioned the number. I forget what it was. But again, these entrepreneurs really are using old Valletta houses for a new purpose, which is fine. But I think, looking at it from the outside, that it's important that they know what they're doing, if you see what I mean.
Yes. This is somewhere where somebody with this sort of background, cultural heritage management, can give a lot of good advice. Because, obviously, we want to use these buildings, we want to use them in a way that is sustainable, but maybe there's a way which could be more in line with the building itself, more sympathetic to the building itself. So this is, yes, another area where the course is very new. It used to be held before it was stopped, and now it's being held. It's being held again. This is where these people can really, so even if they want to set up shop as consultants, because it's hugely important to be sustainable and to be sympathetic to the building. I mean, you can't rip out the inside of a building and build a new structure. Sometimes it's permitted. But then if you want to attract a certain type of tourists, they're not going to be attracted to that. So, yes, this is another area which I think hasn't yet been exploited, in this way.
And what about your work, your personal work at the moment? What are you working on? You're researching something in particular, or are you so taken up with these projects and your teaching that it's difficult to do more?
Well, our department is a tiny department. We're only sort of four persons and one on maternity leave. So, yeah. We're basically running these courses, dissertations. My work on stone continues, but through my PhD students. It's the only way I can manage. They're very good students. They do very good work. They're doing groundbreaking work for Malta. That's the way I pursue my research. It's through my master's students. Sometimes they do very, very good work, very good dissertations. So although I would love to sit in the lab and do some work, which I really miss, it's also important to pass it on to your students. It's also important that they take over at a certain point. And I'm very, very happy with my students. We have really, even the students who actually choose to do master's programs with us, we have students who really love this. Basically, you have to like it, because otherwise you can't. It's not something which is going to give you a huge amount of money. And the job opportunities are there, but they're not enormous. So you basically, it's a passion which drives you and nothing else.
Well, on that positive note, I would say, really, I'd like to thank Professor Joanne Kassar for coming to talk to us about this Ewagloss, this glossary that she's working on with others, and also about the work of her department. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye. Program li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġu plilkom bi xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.